AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's Rubrik.com.
You're back with Gallant and George
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Time now to talk Texans with ESPN Texans reporter DJ Bienemé. Brought to you by Houston Powder Coaters and the DraftKings Sportsbook at Golden Nugget Lake Charles.
DJ Bienemé with us in the studio. He didn't like the last segment that we did. We were talking about the man who did not have his headphones on in the bathroom.
I just want to know, like, how were you so attentive to know all these things while another man's urinating?
I mean, it's playing through his phone while I was urinating.
So it's a small bathroom.
I'm not whistling to myself.
It was, I had to pee in a toilet.
He was watching a video about, like, the history of peeing in toilets. I'm not kidding. It is funny, right? I mean, if it had been anything else, I'm not sure I would have noticed it. But it's something you're definitely going to notice while you yourself are peeing in the bathroom. I remember there was one thing that was said there. I'm not going to repeat this because this was a little bit gross that was in the video. But I remember there was one thing that was said along the way and I was like, whoa, what? Because it was talking about something that I was like, is this person looking about whether or not he needs to go see a doctor? Like, anyway, you know who else might have needed to go to the doctor on Monday?
Caleb
Williams. Yeah. He got absolutely beat. DJ, I could not have been more impressed by the defensive effort by the Texans on Sunday. The pass rush, the ability to stop the run, the coverage from Derek Stingley, from Kamari Lassiter. Do you think that was the best defensive performance for D'Amico Ryans to this point in his time as Texans head coach?
Nah, I think the Titans game in Nashville, I think they got a 7 sacks.
Last year, you're right.
Yeah, they held to like 7 points or something like that. And then
with Case Keenum under center.
Right, and I think because Case threw a pick six in that game, and I saw that it was just field goals, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
But that's up there. The playoff game against the Browns, obviously holding them to 14 points, 2 pick sixes, that's up there. Yeah, so I would say, you know, this past one,
it's
up
there
for sure. Yeah, no, it's up there for sure. I'm trying to think of maybe another one. Yeah, no, but that one's for sure top three. I think you are between those other two. When you consider the magnitude, the what was at stake and things of that nature. Those two are probably top two, but then that one, the one on Sunday is probably three.
Any of that, you know, or how much of this translates, do you think, going forward? Or how much of it was just, well, it's a rookie quarterback. D'Amico blitzed 41% of the time.
Like, yeah.
How much of it's sustainable versus maybe this was just really taking advantage of an inexperienced quarterback?
Yeah, I think the latter, they were just taking advantage of an inexperienced quarterback because D'Amico doesn't really blitz that often. He's more of a four-man pass rush and then, you know, have as many people in coverage as possible. He blitzed a little bit more mainly because it was clear that, you know, the O-line was going to have some issues picking up some of the blitzes. Caleb was going to hold the ball. So they're going to really be able to get after him, and his coverage on the back end was effective. So I think it's part of the latter. I don't think they could blitz 40% of the time if they're going against, I don't know, Patrick Mahomes or somebody. You know, I think those guys would be able to pick it apart. But a young quarterback like Caleb in his second start, who tends to want to hold the ball and play off script anyway, yeah, that's usually how he plays those guys. He plays those guys, you know, trying to really get after them, send them heat. He did that against Lamar in the playoff game because once you speed up their clock, that's when, like, a lot of them, you know, they go into just trying to turn a hero ball. And once they turn Caleb into hero ball, they had them where they wanted them.
It was fun to watch him trying to be elusive, but, man, that guy got absolutely beaten up on Sunday. I definitely am a big believer that he's a tough SOB playing quarterback if he's able to make it through that game healthy. Now, continuing to talk about the Houston Texans defense after holding Caleb Williams and the Chicago Bears to 13 points in Sunday Night Football, two guys that have really jumped out defensively for the Texans to open up the year, Jalen Petrie, who everyone thought had the hit of the game on that hit on that Bears tight end, where everyone thought at first, oh, wait, that has to be a dirty hit. And then you see the replay. Oh, nope, clean.
Right.
You also got Henry To'oTo'o, who has been racking up tackles these first two games. Between those two, who's been the most impressive Texans defender?
Between those two, that's a good one. I'm gonna lean Petrie. I'm a little biased though, but I'm gonna lean Petrie.
Why are you biased about Petrie?
I like Petrie.
You like Petrie? Okay.
Yeah, I like Petrie. Me and his dad, you know, we text quite often.
Oh wow.
Yeah, we text pretty often. You know,
so you're part of the family, basically.
I won't say I'm part of the family, but you know, I'm an associate of the family.
Okay.
But yeah, I would say Petrie. Petrie's been pretty good in coverage. Obviously, he's been a force in the run game. Him and Henry both have had good impact in terms of being able to limit teams running the ball, because I think the past 2 weeks, I don't think a running back has got over 50 2 weeks. So I think
Swift was 12 for 14.
Yeah. So they've been stout, you know, and Petrie around the box is an impact player. So I would still lean towards Petrie because he's been good in coverage. And because teams haven't picked on him, teams haven't been able to pick on him. And then obviously he helps a lot in the run game.
When you look at Lassiter, his Pro Football Focus grades, 90 plus at this point. He's only given up one catch on the season. And you got Kalen Bullock, who had a good week one. Are you still surprised to see, like, the rookies on defense making the level of impact they are this quick?
First and foremost, you know.
You don't like Pro Football Focus?
I don't like Pro Football. I don't like their grades.
Okay.
Yeah. But that's not here nor there. I would say, am I surprised? And they're continue making plays now. A little bit. I mean, like, you know, they've kind of hit the ground running. You know what I mean? Like, they've both been able to make plays. Kamara basically had two interceptions. Both of them were acrobatic catches. I didn't know he had hands like that. He was able to make plays. Bullock hasn't given up any explosives. He had the DPI, but he was trying to make a play on the ball. You know, kind of rookie thing. He'll learn how to drive in on, you know, in breaking route of that magnitude down the seam. He'll get better at that. But outside of that, I think I've been wildly impressed with how they perform, because that's allowed them to play at the level that they've been able to play at, you know, well, last game. Obviously, the Colts game was up and down. They had moments, but it was still kind of up and down as defense. But obviously on Sunday, with those two playing as well as they did, that allowed the entire defense to play as on one accord.
We're still offensively seeing a lot of success with C.J. Stroud and Nico Collins. Feels like 3 to 4 plays a game where all you can do is just say, wow, that was really impressive. But they're definitely, if we're talking about the part of the Texans that maybe has had the most issues to this point this year, it's probably been the offense, because it's held up to such a high standard going into the year, adding Stephon Diggs, Tank Dell being healthy again. What do you think has been the biggest issue for the offense to this point?
I would say, because, it's not like, I asked D'Amico, what can they do to get those two guys more involved, Dell and Diggs? And then rewatching it, I think they've tried to get Diggs involved. I think it's just been more like defenses have taken him away at times, or the coverage for the route that he's running you can't throw the ball there. So I would say some of the disguises post-snap have kind of given Bobby and CJ some issues in terms of play design and getting the ball where it needs to go. I would say that's probably the biggest issue right now, and which is why at least some clunkiness versus where it's CJ. I mean, it's a lot. CJ to Nico, they've been doing that since last year, so I think it's easier that there's specific plays that they can call that they can rely on to get Nico the ball. I mean, it's clear, right?
It's crazy, too, because I thought about this after the game. You know, Nico Collins wasn't with C.J. Stroud this offseason. He was with Diggs. He was with Tank Dell.
Right.
And yet, all that time away, it's just like they left off.
Yeah, no, exactly. I mean, you know, where C.J. is really accurate at, where he wants to get the ball, is over the middle of the field, and Nico is able to get into those windows with ease consistently. He's able to get into specific windows that's behind the linebackers, in front of the safeties, but away from the cornerbacks, and able to just get in that area like consistently. So again, it's like for them, it's like riding a bike. So I would say when it comes to just finding ways to get Diggs and Tank more involved, it's going to be on Bobby to figure out which ways to make it happen to where it's within the flow of the offense versus when it can feel like it's being forced. Because I remember, like, there was one drive where, CJ threw out route to Dell, and it, I think it was after it was hurrying up, and he tried to force it to Dell. I mean, and it was, you know, it could have been completed, but like, you know, just trying to get him to rock, and it necessarily, I don't know if that was necessarily within the flow of the offense, and that can kind of create some clunkiness, but I do think they have to figure out how to get them all going to where like they're playing off of each other, not to where it's okay, well, let's design this play for Diggs. If he gets it, great. If not, blank. You know, if it's get it for Nico, if it's there, great. If it's not, blank. Because I think you have these guys so they can feed off of each other versus if it's just designed to get one guy the ball, if it's not there, then, you know, try to work to the other guy. But if their routes aren't, you know, I guess benefiting off of each other, if a DB takes away Nico, but the route for Diggs or let's say Tank isn't, you know, kind of benefiting off of that, and they can take still take away Tank and, you know, Diggs, the play's kind of dead. And that's what it felt like at times, you know, where it's just like if the primary guy isn't open, going through the progression doesn't necessarily mean that the other guy is going to be open because the route combinations are effective in that aspect. So it feels like they're still trying to figure that out, and the sooner they figure it out, the better. But I don't necessarily think this will be something that's going to be fixed this week or next week. I think it'll be a whole season thing. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like the hardest part about watching, you know, the NFL right now and the Texans is that, you know, I saw the stat flying around that, what, 2 years ago there was 110 touchdown passes the first two games, the first 2 weeks of the season across the league. This year it's at 71. It dropped from, like, 88 last year. So, like, the offense is just it's just poor across the league right now. So I kind of with you where, like, it's going to take some time to figure this out. So how much of this is just is learning and rust? Like, when you're, you know, when you're writing articles and you're viewing this team versus just like, hey, maybe it's just not as good this year.
Yeah, I think it's, yeah, not good this year. And defenses are running way more too high and they're disguising so much better now. Because that's another thing too, right? Like, CJ, a lot of times when he's dropping back, the coverage that he's expecting might not be it, but it's not even necessarily his fault. Like, there's one play where, like they motioned across. It might have been it's a play where he got sacked up the middle. It was, like, second half. But, like, they motioned across. It looked like single high. And then the cornerback was still in his same spot post-snap, but he kind of went to more, like, of a deep – he basically, like, replaced the safety. So while he was off-ish, he just kind of slid over. And then you had the nickel corner going to the flat. So basically inverted cover two, right? And it was against the Texans trips look. And Nico was open on that backside dig. But, like, that is – if you're motioning to the right side, like, your read is over there. Trying to get back over to, you know, the backside, especially if it looks like it's single high. And then you look back – obviously, I'm not CJ, but I can only imagine – if you see single high and it's not that and you're getting back over there and you still now you kind of see two, but you thought it was one and the guy that's deep is the cornerback. So like that and everything is split seconds. So I think it's more like just getting a beat on what these defenses are doing and then figuring out ways how to consistently attack it. But right now, you know, Gus Bradley did a good job of disguising. So the Eagles did a great job of disguising. Like, and that's why this week – it's going to be a tough battle because Brian Flores does a great job of that because, like, he'll put a bunch of guys at the line of scrimmage. And sometimes you'll see Harrison Smith hovering outside the right outside the left tackle or right tackle. And then once you say hike, he's at center field or he's at the deep hash, you know. So, like, it's going to be an interesting battle this week. And, like, you know, Sarge and Chance are arguing about it. Like, Sarge thinks that the Vikings have no chance at winning. And I'm like, I don't know about all that.
They have a very good coaching staff, yeah, and it's exactly. Not just Brian Flores, who I totally forgot was their defensive coordinator
right.
Until you just mentioned it right now. I think Flores is a very good defensive coach, but also Kevin O'Connell, he can make it work, and there's a reason that there's so many NFL people that love Sam Darnold. I have never counted myself as one of them, but there is a skill set there that I feel like if the right coach, theoretically, could get the most out of him. Through 2 weeks, we've seen that. We'll talk a little more about the Vikings in a bit. The Texans' violence defensively, really...
Yeah.
I enjoyed it.
Right.
And it wasn't just Petrie and Toa Toa. What did you make of Azeez Al-Shaair on the sideline, essentially in a 1-on-9 scenario, saying, you know what, I'm just going to smack Roshon Johnson in the face.
Man,
he had a great explanation about it afterwards. I stand with Azeez Al-Shaair.
Because you're a homer. But I don't disagree. But
strike first, Cobra Kai, baby.
I think doesn't this kind of flow back into what we saw throughout training camp, the physicality that they had. Like, I'll never forget that June practice, that late July practice, excuse me, where Jimmy Ward tries to knock out Stephon Diggs.
Right.
Derek Stingley basically shoves Dalton Schultz to the ground. Like, I remember Jeff Okuda knocking out Robert Woods and then doing a rockabye baby pose after he knocked him down. It's funny because, like, he was like, oh, snap, I knocked him down. Then he just started doing rockabye baby pose. So, like, this kind of, like, fits into, like, the tenacity that this defense wants to have. And it's something that was on display throughout training camp.
And in the game, too. I the hits on Caleb Williams, they were hard hits, you know? I mean, we're not just the sacks. We're talking about ones downfield.
I mean, like, it was all clean, and, like, they were dominating them. They had no answer.
It was,
like,
great.
It was just – that was – I think that's what really just stood out. Like, it just seemed like a different defense than we've ever seen D'Amico run. The stunts, everything, the blitzing, like, just to see, like, that pivot, you know, especially when you look at their schedule, and, like, you have Sam Darnold, who has experience, yes, but, like, you have Trevor Lawrence, who's struggling. You have – Jacoby Brissett or Drake May coming up. You have maybe Malik Willis coming up. Like, they're going to play a lot of quarterbacks, but, like, they're going to be able to take advantage and just, like, make them, like, miserable for teams this
year. Yeah, nah, for sure. I think Caleb was more of a, you know, they obviously saw something on film that they thought they could exploit, and they kind of waited a little bit to the second half to really tick up the blitz.
Well, like, they really adjusted because, like, you know, Collinsworth was going through on the broadcast where, like, Caleb was getting the ball out in 2.5 seconds. The Bears were moving the ball well down the field, and then all of a sudden it just stopped.
Yeah. And I think a lot of that was, you know, changing up the looks, some of the pressures, things of that nature. And I think this is more of, like, a game plan specific, you know, approach for this week, because D'Amico would rather have four get to the quarterback and let, you know, just sit back in coverage. That's what he preferred to do. That's what him and Salo, that's what they love to do. If they're blitzing a lot, that's more game plan specific for that week. And I think Caleb showed that if you can just have bodies around him, you could rattle him. Based off of what I saw against Tennessee, it was a similar thing. Like, if you got bodies around him, he was going to try to turn the hero ball and try to run around like he was playing against Utah. And obviously, this ain't the Pac-12, and they were able to take advantage of that.
DJ Bien-Aimé, ESPN Houston, Texas beat reporter with us in studio. Joe Mixon suffers the ankle injury in Sunday Night Football. And we can talk about the hip jog tackle if you want in a moment, but I want to focus just on the running game for the Texans without the Colts' run defense against them, who looked really bad against the Packers, even though Malik Willis was under center for them this past Sunday. And without Mixon, the Texans' running offense, not a good day for them at the office. I know the Bears have a good run defense, but say Joe Mixon's out for a while, what are they going to do? Do you expect them to stay where they're at with the running back group? Akers had a couple of nice runs, but that fumble, I would imagine, is definitely not going to help him earn trust.
Yeah, I would say, you know, running back by committee with Dare.
Do you think Dare's first?
No, it'd be Damian first.
Damian first if he's healthy.
Yeah, Dare as your third down back, and then, you know, rotate. On clear running situations, Cam and Damian. But, yeah, I think it'd be those three. And I think, you know, Joe's availability this week is going to be a big factor this week, because I think the Niners, they were able to move the ball last week because they were able to run the ball, because there were a lot of times where they were switching up that picture on Brock post-snap a lot. And there were a lot of times where he would look right and then, like, what he thought was there was no longer there and he would try to take off. And I think there could be a lot of that this week with CJ if they can't run the ball. You don't want to get third and longs against Brian Flores. He'll have you in absolute hell. So the run game is going to be very, very vital. Like, if they got to run the ball, like, on first and second down sometimes, just to kind of keep that, you know, blitz out the way just a little bit, they're going to have to do that. You know, I think this is they threw the ball 40 times. Well, they dropped back 39 times. To 21 rush attempts minus the kneel down, that formula won't work this week against the Vikings and that secondary along with that coach, that won't work. They're gonna have to be a lot more balanced, and Joe Mixon is very vital to that because he has vision and power that nobody else on this in that running back room has.
Do you have any vibes of, like, you know, or anything you've heard about how long Mixon
the aura
could be out for?
Yeah, it doesn't seem like it's going to be too crazy. Like, okay. I could see maybe, like, him missing, like, a week. Because he came back in the game.
You know what I mean? Yeah.
Like, and he had a couple of carries. So, I think if he missed, it would just be this week, and then he'll be back. I could potentially see him missing this week, kind of like I remember when Tyreek kind of rolled his ankle on Monday Night Football last year, and he finished the game, but he missed that week against the Jets, and then he came back the following week against the Cowboys. So I think that I could see a scenario because, like, the fact that Joe came back into the game is a good sign that it's not going to be long-term.
I remember when he came back into the game, and I was surprised. I was like, wait a second. That injury looked horrible. Right, what happened? Right, but he did come back in for a little bit of time, so we're all hoping that he's going to be okay and be back sooner rather than later. Vikings in Minnesota on Sunday. I'll add some more reasons why I agree with you. I don't think this is a lock for the Texans. I thought this past game for the Texans was going to be a lock.
Yeah,
it's a tough place to play. That's one of the louder stadiums in the NFL. People don't really talk about how loud it is there.
That's what I've heard.
You've also got in O'Connell, a guy who just seems to know how to get the most.
What'd you call him?
Kevin O'Connell?
Oh, I thought you said Ken O'Connell.
Okay. My bad. Sometimes the words, they slur when I speak a little bit too fast. Oh, when he's drinking. No, don't worry. We don't do that until after the show. But Kevin O'Connell, he's found a way at least these first couple of weeks to make it work with Sam Darnold. And the funny thing is, seems like some people expected that to happen. Not a lot of people, but some people expected him to figure out a way to make this thing work. They're 2-0, one of the surprises of the NFL season to this point, especially beating San Francisco to get that second win. What is it, based off of what you've seen, what you've heard about from the Vikings, that has allowed for this start, other than Justin Jefferson, and we'll see what's his status with the quad injury?
So. Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, Sam's playing complimentary football, and, you know, obviously he still has a couple of turnovers, but their defense is, they're playing, like, I think as a team, they're playing complimentary football, where, like, the defense is putting the offense in good positions and vice versa. Solid special teams, things of that nature. So that's why I think it's more that. Obviously, Sam has been effective, and Kevin O'Connell is able to get, you know, some decent play out of quarterback. We saw what he did with Josh Dobbs last year, where he got him basically off the street and was able to make him play decent football until, you know, they put him under the lights and he started to vomit all over himself. But, you know, Kevin O'Connell is – he's a former quarterback, and he's been in the Sean McVay system, so he knows how to, you know, put quarterbacks in advantageous situations. It just won't last that long, I think, with Sam Darnold because it is Sam Darnold. But usually if you're going to get decent play from a, you know, a castaway guy, it's usually early on in the season versus late because there's not that much film because, like, you're trying to mirror when you're game playing, you're trying to mirror what does Sam Darnold do well along with what Kevin O'Connell, you know, calls. And it's too early to really have a great beat on what that is actually going to look like. You're kind of still educatedly – you give me, like, educated guesses. But I would say by week 5, 6, 7 is when, you know, Sam will come back down to earth. But the Texans ain't playing them in week 7, 8, 9, 10. They're playing them in week 3. So I guess it's another scenario where he's efficient again. But I think this game's going to come down to which defense makes just enough plays and who can keep – I think it's a race to 24 points. The first guy at 24 probably wins the game.
Man, might be 20. They didn't get to 20 last week. No Jefferson, no Addison potentially this weekend. Like, both guys are questionable.
I think Jefferson will play.
Yeah. I kind of hope he does.
You got him on fantasy team?
No. I want to see him versus Stingley.
I don't think we should leave him Stingley 1-on-1
with Jefferson. No, I don't think so either. Well, it can't be Jimmy Ward back there.
I know, but I'm just saying, like, nah. Like, as much as I love Stingley, you don't leave. I wouldn't leave Darrell Revis 1-on-1. Against Justin Jefferson.
Yeah, but, like, it's just, like, because, like, that's always the Stingley hype goes back to that video from his freshman year going 1-on-1 versus Chase and Jefferson at LSU. So, like, I think it's a fun matchup this week.
It will be a fun matchup. I would like to see it, too, but please give Derek some help. Or just put Derek on a number 2 wide receiver, let him erase him, and then double Justin Jefferson with Kamari and the safety up top.
Makes sense.
Yeah. You know. It'd be entertaining, but, you know, Justin Jefferson, he went 97 against 2 guys.
Yeah, but the ref was faster.
I know.
That ref was running down the field.
Would you have beat him in a race, Paul?
No.
You don't think you'd beat him in a race? I'd have beat him in a race.
Yeah, you ran track.
I'd have beat him in a race.
Yeah.
But he was high stepping, though.
Way too early prediction for Sunday. Who's the first to 24? It's Tuesday. It's relaxed. Just give us a take. Just give me a juicy take.
24?
Who's the first of 24? Well, you said first of 24, probably.
I feel like the Vikings would be the first 24.
Oh, damn, dog. Damn.
It's all right. We know how DJ's takes.
Who'd you rather have, a homer or that guy right here?
I mean, he picked the Colts to win the division.
So. I switched it, though. I switched it.
He did switch.
I know. That's the season that started. Paul said it's early. You've got till Friday when you go on with the Killer Bees to switch your pick.
And I switched it.
You know what? I bet this is because you were telling us you were having the conversation with Big Sarge Sports and Chancellor Johnson, and Sarge is so confident. I feel like you are just naturally being a contrarian because of the confidence I'm assuming Sarge spoke with, the gusto.
Nah. I was thinking that prior to even knowing what Sarge's take was.
Okay.
Damn. Yeah. So, I mean, if the Texans win, I mean, that's great for business. So, you know.
Vikings 3-0.
I'm never against the Texans winning. I'll say that much. So
he is DJ Bieniemy. You can catch his work for ESPN covering the Houston Texans on the internet. DJ, always appreciate you joining us, man.
No problem.
In case you missed it, everything over the weekend we didn't get to, the last 2 days, is next. Galan and George, stay put.
Did you catch everything this weekend in the world of sports and beyond? Neither did we.
I do not recall that, okay?
It doesn't ring a bell.
Sorry, I have no recommendation of that.
No idea.
Absolutely not. And now, in case you missed it, with Galan and George.
Texans 2-0 atop the AFC South. The rest of the AFC South. What a fun weekend. First, you had another Will Levis being Will Levis moment. This time, in the red zone against the Jets, trying to lateral the ball instead of just taking a sack. The ball ends up just rolling out of his hand and gets recovered by the New York Jets. I hope that we get this every single week. New Titans head coach Brian Callahan, who last week was very frustrated with the offense and said that they should have just punted every single possession in the second half, had this to say about Levis's fumble.
I was upset. It was dumb. It was the same exact thing he did last week, and he cost us points in the red zone. And that is what it is. He's a grown-up, and he knows better. And so, you know, I was really irritated that he cost us 3 points in a game that we probably needed it.
What was his answer to that question?
You'll have to ask him what the answer was. He didn't have an answer in the moment. I think he was just mad, but. We try to come back and rally. I mean, those things happen in football games, good things, bad things. I'll get mad at him. You know, he'll get mad at me, whatever. It's the way it goes. But this was really kind of an inexcusable mistake.
You hate to see it. Also,
these things happen. No, they don't.
Only with Will Levis. Only with Will Levis.
Like you might. There'll be a moment this season where CJ Stroud and Bobby Slowick have, like, a little bit of, like, verbal, you know, back and forth. Not like that. Mm-hmm. You don't typically see a player running off the field and a coach yelling, "What the bleep are you doing?" Like, that doesn't happen very often.
More from Sunday, the Packers beat the Colts. Anthony Richardson, shaky performance. The Colts' run defense might be one of the league's worst. But the thing that I'm going to remember most from this game is Malik Willis on a, I believe, third down, gets a snap from the Packers center who had puked on the football. And because the center had puked on the football right before snapping it, Willis did not throw it because I guess it was slippery. I kind of understand that.
Yeah. The video is very funny to watch because it's just the center is just like ready to snap it. It happens. And then they just play on. Like, there's like no concern. It's just like Ruben. The guy from U of H, Ruben Ije, our guy, right tackle. And he was walking up to the field just letting his guts fly out last year. And then he just walked over and they just played football.
This was like perfectly timed up with the snap count, though, where it was like, snap. Like it was,
he's like, he knew to puke on set.
Yeah.
Like it was down.
It's got to be so gross being a quarterback. Like, your hand is on a sweaty fat man's ass for half the game, and then he might puke on it from time to time.
Yeah.
Like, how often are you washing your hands over the middle of the game? I don't think germaphobes could be quarterbacks.
Yeah, maybe this is why Lamar gets sick all the time. Because, like, Lamar Jackson is like...
he has a poor immune system.
Oh, yeah. Man.
He's just missing practice all the time and being late to games. Like, he's just getting sick.
That's an interesting theory. The Jaguars stink. Imagine losing to Deshaun Watson.
I'd rather with the puke ball. than play for Jacksonville.
I'd rather play for Jacksonville than deal with the puke ball. Continuing, in case you missed it, Clint Kubiak is the new Saints offensive coordinator. He and his Saints are 2-0 with Derek Carr. They have scored the most points in the NFL. They have the best point differential in the NFL by a significant margin.
It's unbelievable. And they're doing it like a bunch of different ways. Like, they're throwing the ball deep down the field. They're running the ball really well. They're still, whatever reason, like, wasting time with Taysom Hill in the backfield, trying to make him a thing. I don't quite understand, like, why it's still a thing, but it is. But, like, they're just Derek Carr. He'll be starting my fantasy lineups this week. I'm going all in. Going all in with
Derek
Carr.
He might be available in some leagues.
He's available in every league.
I was going to say, I looked last night. He was available in my league.
Because no one believed it after week one. But after week two, you're just like, well, like, I think I got to ride the hot hand.
Might have to cut Caleb and pick up Derek Carr.
Ooh. I would probably advise that.
He's doing a Jared Goff right now. I mean, sometimes these veteran quarterbacks, you go to the right scheme, and it does work out. And we think these guys are washed because first couple of years in the league, it doesn't work out. But look, Carr's had a He's had a pretty terrible situation for a lot of the last decade, for what it's worth. I'm not going to lie, I kind of enjoy him a little bit more after. It's funny how Pardon My Take interviews make people seem normal. Because I used to think, oh, Derek Carr, he blocks everybody. Found out he's not the one that's blocking everybody. I guess that's one of his brothers that's doing that. I feel like he's handled the bad situations he has been dealt with over the last couple of years pretty well. And Clint Kubiak, to his credit, through 2 weeks, wow, this Saints offense looks really good. Alvin Kamara looks good again, too, which is a big part of this.
It is.
Well.
But, I mean, Clint Kubiak's like, he's going to be number one on everyone's.
Yeah, he's going to be a head coach next year.
He might have moved himself in front of Bobby Slowick already.
Yeah, yeah. And like you mentioned, still doing the Taysom Hill thing, huh? That was a little surprise because I didn't watch their game against the Panthers. I watched the game against the Cowboys. I was like, wow. They're still doing this, huh?
Yeah, I still get it.
In case you missed it, twitch.tv/ESPN975, Big Boss Marshall, Clarence, our Saints fans. Oh, when the Saints go marching in, I'm wondering if he was one of those guys playing the tuba. For those who missed this, this was awesome. After the Saints beat the Cowboys at Jira World, there was an impromptu parade in the greater Arlington area featuring multiple tubas as Saints fans march down the street. Hell yeah.
I think it's awesome.
Love it.
I just want to know, like, I really just have so many questions about, like, they're always in their car. They bring them just in case. Were they in the stadium and then left with them?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what's the strategy here? Is there a giant group text? It's go time.
I bet there's just a lot of Saints fans in Dallas. I mean, New Orleans. I mean, these are the three closest cities. I guess Atlanta's kind of close. But, like, you know, these cities are all within, like, 4 to 8 hours of one another. I like that Houston and New Orleans, we can do that meme, right? Like the white bicep of Arnold Schwarzenegger, the black bicep of Carl Weathers coming together in the middle. We can all agree, F the Cowboys.
Yes.
Yeah. F them.
Always. Yep.
Continuing to go around the NFL, Joe George likes to call people washed. Is Sean Payton washed? Sean Payton and the Denver Broncos lost to the Justin Fields quarterbacked Pittsburgh Steelers. And Sean Payton, he could have kicked an onside kick after this game was, you know, within a score. Instead of kicking the onside kick, though, he kicks it off, and he ends up getting the ball back with, like, 10 seconds left and no timeouts for Bo Nix is not making anything happen there. Sean Payton, forgetting the basic game management after talking so much trash about Texans ownership without saying who he was talking about, ownership groups across the NFL, might be washed.
Yeah, he's on a washed watch.
Washed watch. I forgot about that. Yeah.
Oh yeah, we're talking about doing that on Fridays, I think, right?
We could do it tomorrow. Point, yeah. We could do it Thursdays.
Washed watch.
Thursdays are an open day.
It is like a
it's a mouthful.
Yeah, washed watch.
I kind of like it.
That's why I kind of want to do it on Wednesday. So it's wash.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Washed watch Wednesday.
Yep. Yeah.
You have to think
instead
about
of,
it
instead
every
of
time.
WWW, what would Jesus do? It's just washed wash Wednesdays.
Yeah, WWW.
Washed Wednesdays.
Watch Wednesday.
Watched. You got it dyslexic.
Oh, yeah, I did it. See, that's the problem.
It's hard, but you just got to say it slowly.
Yes.
The Giants stink. The Panthers stink. Who's worse? I think we're going to do this every single week. Panthers got to be worse. They benched Bryce Young.
Dude, I'm going to go Giants. They scored three touchdowns and lost the football game.
Yeah, I might go Giants.
I don't know.
Like, I know they didn't have a kicker, but like that, Brian Daboll like should be fired for this. He knew his kicker was hurt, and he had a kicker on the practice squad. Didn't elevate him. He cost his team a game by just being a total idiot. So I think I'm going to go Todd the Show, worst team, a.k.a. Giants fan, worst team in the NFL.
It's tough losing to the Commanders team that kicks seven field goals and has a running back playing quarterback. But Bryce Young had 18 completions for 84 yards on Sunday.
The reason the Panthers aren't worse, they benched him. Giants are still playing Daniel Jones. At least they benched that guy.
Yeah, where's Tommy? I saw Tommy on TV.
Tommy DeVito?
Yeah.
Tommy Cutlets?
Or Drew Locke?
Yeah.
Maybe he's hurt. No one talks about
Drew Locke season. Give me some Drew Locke. Then we'll have the conversation. Look, who's worse?
It's the age of the comeback story for quarterbacks. You've got Derek Carr, you've got Sam Darnold, you've got Baker Mayfield, you got all these guys coming back, resurging their careers. It's time for Drew Locke season. Put on your back.
I'm more excited about Andy Dalton season in Carolina.
I kind of think he'll make them not good, but like a decent bad team, like a respectable bad team. What they've been putting on the field was not respectable.
Dave Canales.
Wash.
Are we on? Wife, are they? Watch. Are they?
I saw a tweet. I saw a funny tweet from Landry. Like, maybe Dave Canales has commitment issues.
Are they on Texans territory? Like, where like they might fire three Canales? Coaches in 3 years.
Yes. I wouldn't rule it out. They just benched the number one overall pick after 18 games.
Mm-hmm. And he did say he was asked like if ownership had anything to do with it, and he said, no, it was my decision. So they might not love this.
I don't know if – I doubt it. I doubt that Dave Canales benches Bryce Young and Dave Tepper is like, wait, what? No, please don't. Like, I think that's Canales doing some water carrying for his owner.
Yeah.
Not making it seem like it's a complete clown show, even though it is a complete clown show.
In case you missed it, Galan and George – every single Tuesday at 11:30, everything you missed over the weekend in sports. Coming up next, garbage time. A huge arrest in the world. Finally, a man who's been on the run for far too long. He going to jail. That and a lot more. We wrap things up next. Stick around.
You're listening to Gallant and George on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's Paul Gallant and Joe George.
You know, in the last segment, last chance to ask Gallant and George, we were talking about who's worse, the Giants or the Panthers. Mm. And I think that you guys might be right in saying it's the Giants, because there are some Giants fans online who want the Giants to trade for Bryce Young.
That's a tough spot to be in.
I hope they trade him.
Bryce Young?
Mm-hmm.
Why do you hope they trade him?
I want to see him somewhere else. I want to see, like, I don't know if you can bring in a new coach and fix it. Like,
well,
let's just say like the doctor says, hey man, Tua, your brain is scrambled. Like, you don't think like he can unlock some, Mike McDaniel can't unlock some version of Alabama Bryce Young in Miami?
Maybe.
Like, I want to see it. Like, I wish there was a way we could make that happen.
I do think we need to take McDaniel off the pedestal we've put him on, given that they're 1-11 against teams with a +500 record or something.
That's true. Yeah.
So, just something to keep in mind. But,
I just want to see it.
I feel like he needs to be backup reclamation project for a year or so, and get the Malik Willis treatment that Malik Willis is getting right now, where it's just, hey, we'll put you on ice. Mm-hmm. You'll only play if our starter gets hurt, kind of thing.
I have a different kind of treatment in mind. It's controversial.
The shin lengthening one?
Yes.
That's painful, I've heard.
It is painful, but the man is 5'10", and he's not big enough to play in the league. He's just not. He's not sturdy like Russell Wilson. He doesn't have an ability to stand in the pocket at all. He just can't.
Yeah.
And He's not fast enough to escape it.
Yeah, like he can't do what Caleb was doing Saturday.
Or and like Kyler is just as small as Bryce. Kyler is just an awesome athlete and has a way better arm.
Kyler is really fast, right?
Yeah.
Kyler moves around like a cat. He's exceptionally quick. Caleb Williams, slippery. Also smaller guy. Bryce Young doesn't have a lot of speed. It's not like he's slow, but he also doesn't have a lot of strength. And, I mean, the first thing for a guy like him, he's got to be able to escape pressure. Russell Wilson, sturdy guy, and at first in his career, was fast enough to routinely pick up 12, 13, mm-hmm. 14 yards.
And, like, physically had an awesome arm. Like, mm-hmm. he could throw that long, deep, the long, high, deep pass to Doug Baldwin mm-hmm. or whoever. Bryce Young just doesn't have that arm, it feels like.
Yeah, but still, it's like you just watch all of his Alabama tape and he's just throwing it the ball down the field. And it's like, where did it go?
I don't know. But the reason we brought that up is Giants fans want the Giants to trade for Bryce Young right now.
You don't want that. You don't want to be the Giants and do it. Like, you want to be the Dolphins.
Yeah, you want to be the Packers. Like, someone yeah. where it's like, he is just a dart throw the Rams or someone like yeah. like that.
Good team.
Yeah, yeah, just anyone where it's like, hey, he's not going to play.
And I wouldn't be surprised if he gets traded this offseason. I mean, we've seen quarterbacks, you know, like, you know, Mac Jones and Fields and everyone from that class. Yeah, was
Trey
traded
Lance
for, like,
got traded.
But Trey Lance got traded the year before for a third round pick, right? So, like, I wouldn't be surprised if, like, that's where you look at a team, you know, a Miami, the New York Jets, like some team that says, hey, we'll waste a third on
he's
a backup quarterback.
Nah. He's not worth
four. Like condition, like Justin Fields trade, I think is his.
That's what you want to get if you're the Panthers. But Joe, I don't think people would give up a sixth for him right now.
Yeah, I mean, I guess Trey Lance, the benefit is that he wasn't on the field.
Yeah,
that's why he had
there was unknown.
He had more value because it was an unknown.
But this you've seen, I mean, God, some of the throws on Sunday. We can act like this is all the Panthers, but
no, I mean, he was not pressured. He only was pressured on 4 out of 29 dropbacks.
Yeah, he's just
I mean, that's a huge problem to be where it looked like he was panicking in what you saw, and there was no one really in his face.
There were a couple of clips. He looked like he was crying. I mean, was he? I don't know, but yeah. You saw the look on his face. Like, the guy's confidence is completely shot. And in addition to that, like, that was going to be what made it work for him in the league. He's the smallest quarterback I think I've ever seen in terms of, like, both height and frame.
Yeah, you could tell just the confidence is just absolutely shot, which, like, it makes sense. All he's done is get his ass kicked for a year and a half. So it makes sense, but it's also a situation of, well, you need to build back that confidence. I don't think the Panthers are in a spot to play a guy and have him build confidence while playing for the Panthers.
Time for a little garbage time to wrap things up.
Oh, I love trash.
Garbage time.
It's garbage.
Starts now.
I'm the trash man.
This is garbage.
Pour one out. Rockets legend Boban Marjanovic officially not coming back to the Houston Rockets. He is going to be playing in Turkey this year.
No. I didn't know that.
Who's going to get the ball when it gets stuck above the rim? Or it's above the backboard?
I mean, who's going to be the charity case? Who's going to be the player everyone chants for at the end of a game?
You guys are so mean.
I wasn't mean. That's a key role that he plays.
Yeah. But
getting a broom and knocking it.
He's a vibe. He's a vibes guy.
He is a vibes guy. That is 100% correct.
I'm going to miss him. And he's going to Turkey, too. They don't even allow free speech there. Mm. It sucks. Continuing through garbage time, this is an interesting question raised by a Dolphins fan. This Dolphins fan, I guess, is looking for any edge that he can possibly get with Tua Tagovailoa hurt. @_whiplashed_, should the Miami Dolphins kill 5 of their players to trigger a disaster draft to improve the roster? Have you ever heard about this rule? I haven't. The NFL disaster draft is a contingency plan to be used when 5 or more players on a team have died or been dismembered. In the draft, the team whose players died will be able to draft the amount of players from other teams equivalent to how many they had lost.
And this fan is suggesting that they do it.
This is from 273 days ago, too.
Yep. I guess it came back up after the Dolphins lost Tua Tagovailoa, seemingly, again on Thursday night.
I guess this is World War II rule?
I guess.
I truly do not know. Probably not, because the NFL was not like this back then. But maybe it was.
I mean, maybe they saw like the Dark Knight Rises and they saw the stadium blow up and they were like, hey, just in case.
I guess there is some, or like a plane crash or something. Like, you know, something bad. But part of this is with the Dolphins having bad contracts on underperforming players such as Zaven Howard. So I think this is a while ago.
Okay. Maybe this isn't real though.
This might have been from, no, this could be from when they're like tanking for Tua or something.
That makes sense.
Or early Tua days.
Diddy. Arrested. Homeland Security got him on Monday night.
I didn't realize he was still in the country. I thought he fled.
Why did he come back? He was in Manhattan. What are you doing?
Like,
I mean, if you're going to be on the run for Jeffrey Epstein Association, I don't know. Don't come back to the United States ever.
Did you see some of the incriminating evidence against him?
I have not. Is it very incriminating?
One of them, I'll just say one incriminating one that doesn't seem like it should be incriminating.
Does
on the
this
face.
Does this say 1,000 bottles of baby oil?
That's exactly it. 1,000 bottles of baby oil. I'm sorry. There's no way you have that and you're not up to something. You should be arrested for having 1,000 bottles of baby oil.
Like, they seized it because, like, it's evidence.
It is evidence.
Where do you store that? You have a closet?
It's like,
yeah, I mean, he's Diddy. He probably has a room in his house.
Yeah, he's got a room for baby oil.
Is it just dedicated to the baby oil? That's
this list of like a thousand,
100 bottles is a lot.
Yeah, like, 1,000. That's a whole closet.
Narcotics, 1,000 bottles of baby oil, 3 AR-15s. Like, that's what TMZ headline
and
is.
For me,
like, what doesn't belong?
For me, the $1,000 bottles of baby oil, that's the craziest thing.
Yeah.
A lot of people have 3 ARs.
Yeah, if you were like, a lot of people have narcotics. We're like 2 truths and a lie. Which one did P. Diddy get caught with? Which 2 and which one did he not? He's like, yeah, no way the baby oil's real. Like,
this does seem.
1,000 bottles? He had 900 bottles, and he was like, I need more.
Well, the question really is, like, how often are you going through them?
Exactly.
I don't know.
This is like a weekly shipment.
I feel like you should, what, 10 at a time? Like that's just like, it. He should
like
only
a,
have 10
It's like
10
a truck
a
of 1,000 baby oil bottles going to show up to his house next week, and he's like, oh, man, Diddy's not here anymore.
Yeah.
Like, we got to return those.
One last one for garbage time. Any of you guys bought a pager recently?
No.
Don't.
No.
Don't.
Oh, don't.
Wasn't planning
on. Don't buy pagers.
You ever seen one, Sean?
No, I'm not 100% sure what they are.
Little concern for my sister and my brother-in-law, who are both doctors, because they still use pagers.
They still use pagers.
They still use pagers.
What?
Why? Just like when like an emergency happens.
Yeah, yeah.
But like, okay,
pagers. Don't buy them. Pagers. Sell.
Don't go to Radio Shack and buy them.
Make sure we tell all the old dudes we work with. Hey guys, get rid of your pagers.
Get rid of your pagers, everybody. And
I'll tell B-Man.
Got him. And on that note, that's going to wrap up today's edition of Gallant and George. Subscribe to the podcast if you haven't already. For our texters, Twitchers, YouTubers, and callers, I am merely Paul Gallant for Sean Mapes and for Joe George as well. So long, farewell, have yourselves a wonderful Tuesday. The Killer Bees are up next. Peace!
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.